This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back to Wells Tech. This is episode 469 for Tuesday, November 1st, 2016. You're joined a show about technology and ministry. And along for the ride each and every week, my podcasting partner, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally. How are you?
I am very good, Martin. And how about you?
Excellent. Well, my calendar, I think my calendar is confused. This is Tuesday, but it says it's election day, and it's not. So
no.
My Outlook calendar failed me today, although I wasn't going to run out and see if the polls were open, because I know pretty well that we have another week left of commercials and all that goes along with that. So
right. We'll be able to rejoice next week when we're recording the podcast. But I've actually already voted absentee, so I didn't have to worry about remembering the right day.
You're going to be joining me next week, and you won't
That's
be able to
right.
vote in your beloved state of Minnesota.
That's right. So we cast our ballots early so we could be at our beloved CMM next week and there with all the good folks in the Milwaukee
area. So since you voted already, the commercials that you get almost nonstop are even more worthless to you.
Right, exactly. I got a mailing today and everything. It's like, sorry, guys, I've already voted.
Yeah.
Not helping your cause any.
Yeah. Well, Sally, I vote today to have another podcast about technology and ministry. And the topic that we've chosen is one that we talk a little bit about off and on, but probably not in earnest since maybe show number four?
Four or five, yeah. I think you're right. But a topic near and dear to probably everyone's heart, and that is striking the right balance with the use of technology and when it goes beyond normal use into the level of addiction.
Yep. And we should note, there are all kinds of addictions, you know, related to internet usage. And perhaps one of the most destructive and maybe one of the most prevalent is that of pornography. We hear a lot about it. Our Synod has been taking some great strides in that area over the last 3, 4, 5 years. I know you've worked with the group to help with their website, and we've got the seminary's attention, and I know it's talked about on our college campuses as well. And we were fortunate enough to convinced Dan Scheffel, staff minister over in the eastern or the western part of Wisconsin, on Alaska area, to join us and talk a little bit about their project called Conquerors Through Christ, a program specifically designed and put together for those to take advantage of who are struggling with addiction, especially pornography, or those who are needing resources to help those who are loved ones, family members, whatever. So without further ado, let's take a look at our interview with Dan Scheffel. Very happy to have on the show today Staff Minister Dan Scheffel from St. Paul's Lutheran in Onalaska, Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us, Dan.
Glad to be with you here today.
We've talked a lot about technology together over the years. You've attended some conferences. You were a presenter, you know, at the Wells Tech Conference. And I thought it would be good to kind of revisit this topic of internet addictions, and specifically pornography. It really is a growing issue, and I know you have a passionate part of your ministry that is kind of dedicated to this. Before we jump into that kind of stuff, maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, your interests, your ministry responsibilities at this point.
Sure. Well, I'm a staff minister at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Onalaska, Wisconsin. I was trained years ago as a Wells pastor and was a Wells pastor for 15 years. In 10 days, I will be married 40 years to the same lovely woman.
Congratulations.
Thank
awesome.
You. Thank you. We have 5 grown children that live all over the country and almost 12 grandchildren. I thoroughly enjoy my administrative duties because God has gifted me in that area. I love technology. I'm part of our tech team here at St. Paul's, do a lot of tech support here at the church and school. And beyond that, I love to fix just about any and everything. Besides my full-time job, I do handyman repair jobs on the side all over the Cooley region.
Is that right? I wish you were closer. I have a few things for you because that's not my specialty. So wonderful. Thank you for taking the time. I know you're busy, but this is a topic that I know you're passionate about, so it made sense to try and get you on to talk about it. How big a problem do you think internet addictions in general are?
I contemplated that question as you sent it to me, and quite honestly, I'm not real familiar with the gamut of internet addictions. There are quite a few different ones. I know the Synod under Alan Siegel Coe is a part of this organization dealing with internet addictions in general. He's also on our Conquerors Through Christ ministry team. The thing I know is I see everybody seems to be glued to their devices, which I suppose in a way is an addiction. If you want to zero in on pornography, we at Conquerors Through Christ, or CTC as I'll refer to it, consider internet pornography to be not just a big deal in the United States or in the developed countries, but a worldwide pandemic, because it's everywhere. Then I've got some stats I can share briefly if you'd like.
Sure. Tell us what the numbers look like.
Well, there's a number of different stats that we share. In fact, in some of my presentations, I'm one of the presenters for Conquerors Through Christ, and I've done quite a few presentations in the last couple of years, 5 different area Lutheran high schools. I was down in Georgia a couple of weeks ago at one of our churches and a number of other presentations. And I've shifted now to actually a video that brings these out, because I think it's more interesting than listening to me rattle them off. But in this case, I'll rattle them off. Every second, over $3,000 is spent on pornography globally, which amounts to about $95 billion annually. Every second, nearly 30,000 internet viewers will view porn. Every 39 minutes, a new pornographic video is made in the United States. The shocker for a lot of people is that the average age of first internet exposure is 9 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Some anti-porn organizations have referred to this syndrome as the new sex education, but of course it's all wrong, because these young viewers are getting the totally wrong concept of what true, pure sexuality is all about. Handheld devices, according to NBC News, make up now about 50% of all access to the internet. 90% of 8 to 16-year-olds have viewed pornography online quite often while doing homework. I know years ago I heard about an innocent search for the White House's website, and if it was plugged in wrong, it redirected people to a pornographic website. 70% of Christian men admit to struggling with pornography in their daily lives. So this isn't just men in general, but this is Christian men. 50% of Christian men and 20% of Christian women admit to an addiction to pornography. And while women don't have as big of a draw to it, we're seeing more and more women are struggling with it. And lastly, of the divorce lawyers out there, they claim that 68% of divorces result from one party having an obsessive interest in pornography. So those are a few of the jarring.
Pretty chilling numbers, yeah. Yes. I said wow after each one of those. So, you know, as a Christian, why is this addiction so dangerous? The some would say, well, this isn't hurting anybody. You know, it's a it's a private sin, etc. Why is this so dangerous?
There is a section of our website devoted to this. I believe Mike Novotny, the chairman of our ministry, put this together, and it's called 10 Things Pornography Doesn't Tell You, and one of them is that, well, it's not hurting anyone, but in fact it is. It hurts a lot of people. In fact, we bring that out in our presentations. But one of the reasons it's so dangerous, we feel, is because it's addictive. It rewires the brain through the release of at least 5 different hormones. When a person, man or woman, is sexually excited, the brain releases 5 different hormones that act much like a drug, and they draw the person into that experience and in a sense rewire their brain so that they want to, and the farther along you go, have to come back for more and more and more. The use of internet pornography only increases one's need for, and it's like it's a whirlpool sucking a person into more and more use. And usually because you get desensitized to what you've seen today, it draws you into more deviant experiences in the future. Bottom line, spiritually, it eats away at one's soul, destroys one's faith, not to mention relationships, families, and careers. One of the big reasons CTC got organized is because we were aware of its damaging effect on families and careers, because we were hearing about and learning about called workers, pastors and teachers who had struggled with this, and some of whom actually lost their calls, their careers as a result of it. And we said, we got to do something to help curb this tide, to stop this pandemic, you know, to try to slow it down.
How we looked at the website there briefly, and we'll return to that. Maybe before we even get there, and I'm sure this is maybe part of your answer, if somebody's really fighting with this addiction and they've come to the conclusion that, hey, I am addicted, this is a problem, what steps should they take? What's the most important first step, second step, third step?
First of all, let me say that one thing that we do distinguish between, and it's a subtle difference, but there's a subtle difference between what we call users or strugglers with pornography and actual addicts. An addict is a person who can't control their addiction, their pull. A user is someone that maybe goes out here, goes out there, but they break away from it and they're good for a week or two and then they're back again. Neither case is good, because a user could end up being an addict very easily. So what to do for help? As I pondered that question, I came up with three basic things. The first one we consider to be very important, and that is that the person must confide in someone that they can trust. As long as their addiction is a secret, it's protected, and it's not going to go away. So they need to confide in someone like their pastor or a trusted Christian friend, someone who will confront their sin with compassion and point them to what Jesus did on the cross to crush the power of their sin. In fact, that concept that I just stated is the undergirding foundation of Conquerors Through Christ. The other reason we started, besides just helping people, is because we knew of a number of other anti-porn ministries out there, and they gave a lot of the how-tos, but not the why, which is that full and free forgiveness that we have in Jesus, because he paid for our sins on the cross. And so we felt we want to have this ministry that's going to offer people, this is bad for you, and here is how God, with his forgiveness and grace, can help you out of it. Second thing they can do and often need to do is seek professional counseling to help them learn how to address the triggers and other psychological aspects of their addiction. And they also may need professional help to reconcile broken relationships. Quite often, these addictions, especially with pornography, will result in broken and shattered marriages, quite often marriages that end up splitting. That doesn't have to be the case, but obviously with this type of a sin, because it affects the core, the intimacy of a marriage, it's very easy for it to blow a marriage apart. The third thing I thought of was that there are a multitude of resources that are out there. I mentioned that some of them are just the how-tos. There are some other good ones besides CTC, and quite often they will also bring in the why. One of the organizations that we are very familiar with and tend to recommend moderately is an organization called Covenant Eyes, covenanteyes.com. They offer both a filtering and an accountability software that you can install on your computer, your phone. In fact, I have it on this computer I'm using, the other laptop at home that my wife and I use, and my cell phone. And what it does is it blocks sites, and then it also, if I click on something that's questionable, marginable, or unallowed, it will send a report to my accountability partners. I actually have several in this case. And then they'll get back to me and say, hey, Dan, what's going on here? And they'll encourage me. In fact, in Conquerors Through Christ, we're calling these people encouragement partners, because we want them to encourage confront the sin, but encourage with the gospel. Conquerors Through Christ, as you said and you showed, has developed a website that has all kinds of different resources out there to help people who are caught in this and to break free.
So let's talk a little bit more about the website. This is something that is very central, I think, to your ministry, as I get the sense. Walk us through it and maybe give us a little bit of the history of it.
Okay. Well, historically, Conquerors Through Christ, CTC, was created in July of 2012. A lady in Western Wisconsin who's a part of our Called Worker Care Committee over here knew of several other of us who had talked with her about the issues of pornography. Some of us have struggled with it ourselves. And she kind of said, hey, should we get together? And we did in Tomah, Wisconsin. And the result of that meeting with about five or six of us was that Conquerors Through Christ grew out of that. We then put together a plan. How can we help people out? Mike Novotny basically developed these five steps that you're reviewing right now on the website. And then our entire committee, which eventually came under the Wisconsin Synod's Commission for Special Ministries, headed up by Pastor James Barringer. He is a part of our committee now. Professor Pastor Alan Sigelko, who's with Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Service, a counselor. And we as a group continue to plan ways like this website to help people with a variety of resources. What you're seeing here is actually a rework of our website that took place about 8 to 12 months ago. We reworked it to make it more visually appealing, and as you can see scrolling, and if you look on it on a iPad or a phone, it is more mobile friendly, and we did all that on purpose. The five steps, you've got them there. Those are kind of core and fundamental. We often go through those when we make presentations. A week from this Saturday, I'm going to be presenting at the Minnesota version of Men of His Word Conference in Rochester. We always address these five steps. Getting real about the wreckage of porn, because it does cause wreckage. It does hurt a lot of people. Get back to God's grace. Again, that's the core. This is how we get our help from God. Get rid of porn. You can't dabble with sin and think you're not going to get burned. You can't play with fire and think you're not going to get burned. Get accountable to others. We feel that's very important. You have to get others involved in this so they can hold you accountable. And then get ready for battle, because it's not a cakewalk. It's a fight. And it's, for most people that have had problems with it, it's a fight to the end of their lives. Like for myself, I have to constantly be watching things. I tell people, when my wife and I are watching TV, I usually have the remote control. That old Victoria's Secrets commercial comes on. I flip it to the next channel just to keep those triggers away, because of all of the sexuality that is out there in our world everywhere.
Looks like you have a lot of different resources here. Obviously, you have the steps and some high-level resources, but it looks like you've got some presentations, PDFs, ebooks, book reviews, video downloads, and then, of course, a link to qualified counselors. Looks like a wealth of resources here. You guys have done a nice job with this.
Yeah, thank you. And a lot of, it's been a community effort. We have some people that specialize in the areas of the website. Staff Minister Dave Hockmuth on our committee was largely involved in developing and reworking the website. Pastor Kent Riediker from the East Coast is our content editor. He does a great job with that. We have a number of people involved in this ministry, and we're looking for more people to get involved and to help, because when I just was going to Georgia here 2 weeks ago to present, the treasurer of my congregation where I serve said, don't we have people in the synod that are closer that could do this? And I said, well, not right yet, and that's the challenge. Mm-hmm. That's one of two big things we're working on, is developing a training program to train other people to present like Mike and I and Kent and Pat Schlosser do, to present all over the synod. We're also putting together a curriculum that'll go from elementary school through college level, that the area Lutheran high schools are currently talking with us about developing a curriculum for the high schools. Kent Reeder is very involved in putting together a program of helps for parents, because that's kind of like the new frontier, in the sense that statistics we've seen and that I present in my presentations to parents is that parents often don't have a clue what their kids are doing on their electronic devices. Right. They don't know what they're getting into. They don't have filters on there or programs to block things. And that's how these kids, 9 years old, get into it. They stumble into it, and then they get sucked into it. So we're working on a lot of different things like that.
Yeah, you kind of anticipated my, you know, one of my last questions is what's next? It sounds like you guys have a full plate and getting more resources, getting more presenters out there, more materials, more curriculum-based kinds of resources. Sounds like you are, you've got a good game plan, good strategy going forward. Remind our viewers again where they would go to get more information about Conquerors Through Christ.
They would go to our website, which is simply conquerorsthroughchrist, all one word, .net.
Okay, very good. And I'm assuming they could talk to any of the committee members as well and ask for presentations and those kinds of things. Wonderful. Just maybe as a closing thought, you mentioned one resource before from Covenant Eyes, and it's interesting because I think maybe our third or fourth show 8 years ago, whatever, we interviewed a gentleman by the name of Paul Mavrijorge, who was from Covenant Eyes, and he talked about that application, and it was probably much more in its earlier stages. I would think that it's really important that whatever you use, these accountability tools, cover all the different channels that are available to internet users these days. So it's not just the computer anymore, but as you mentioned, these mobile devices, and absolutely critical to find a product, a tool that's going to kind of cast a wide net across all the different places. And it, I guess when we talked to Paul, and I'm trying to recall the conversation, and maybe we can talk a little bit about it as well. You know, blocking is fine, but ultimately it's the accountability side that's really important, and a Christian would really, I think, be very grateful to God for providing those people around us that we can have those relationships with on that pretty meaningful level.
Yes, and like I said, I've been using Covenant Eyes, and I can testify that it works quite well. If I can tell just a real quick interesting story on how well it works.
Sure.
I read my news online, so like Fox News, and a couple weeks ago I saw a story that, of course, I thought was interesting with what I do at this ministry. The headline was something like, "Porn star gets into it with hockey player," and it was about a porn star and a hockey player getting into a battle of words through Twitter. Well, I clicked on the link, and guess what? Covenant Eyes blocked it.
Mm-hmm.
I knew, and my wife is one of my accountability partners, which we often discourage, but she asked me when we were setting this up, "Well, do you have anything to hide?" And I said, "Well, no." So I thought she had a good point. She's an accountability partner. The other guy is a good pastor friend across the river in Minnesota. And so he emailed me and said, "You know, what's going on?" I explained it to him. And the funny thing is then, that following Tuesday night, the report comes out on Tuesday. So that Tuesday night, I said, "Hey, honey, let's take a look at this together so you can see what I was, you know, what I was doing." And so we did. Well, of course, when we went to click on it for her to look at it, it was blocked again. She has an administrative password, so she could get in and actually see the article and see that it was basically benign. Funny thing is, 2 days later, my accountability partner across the river says, "Hey, Dan, I see you got blocked again. What's going on?" And I couldn't figure out. I only knew the one time. And finally, it had dawned on me, oh, that's when my wife and I were reviewing it. And then I told them about that. So, I mean, it works all the time. And the neat thing with Covenant Eyes is they are continually developing and getting better products out there. In fact, the app for the Android phone is still in the beta version, but they're working on the full version. And when it's, you know, it pushes out updates, and the full version will be updated to the phone. So they're constantly working on this kind of stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. And there is a cost to that, right?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. It's $14.99 a month. There are versions out there. We actually had a filter on our computers before Covenant Eyes that was free. But the way I tell people is I personally don't feel that you can set a value on moral or spiritual integrity. And for me, it's worth the $15 a month to have things filtered, to have people that can hold me accountable, that can encourage me and keep me on the path of faith and eternal life.
Yeah. Absolutely. I would think that we have obviously a large number of called workers who watch the show and listen to the podcast. And this is something that they vitally need to be aware of, from pastor to teacher to staff minister, not just to share the information and encourage the flock that God has placed under them, but for themselves, right? This is a critical piece of their daily walk, and they need to obviously keep an eye out for Satan here as well as every place else.
Yep, the called workers, and then everybody they serve, all their parishioners, all those students that sit in the desks in front of them, whether elementary or high school or college. Yeah.
Critical time, yeah. Dan, thanks so much for taking the time. Blessings on your ministry. We'll have to catch up and see how things are going with some of the new initiatives that you've got going, but really appreciate the time on this very important topic.
Well, I would encourage your viewers to be sure to check out our website from time to time, because all these things we're developing will be out there eventually as they come to fruition. The other thing is, on the website, they can go to the section on newsletter, and I forgot to mention that, but they can sign up for our newsletter that we send out and little e-news blurbs in between, and then they'll get those by email. They get them on their phone, on their computer, and that's another way they can keep up with what's going on.
Great. Thank you for that. Thank you for all you do. Blessings on your work.
Thanks. You too.
Many thanks to Dan for taking the time and sharing his expertise. You can tell that this is a passion of his, and he spent a lot of time researching and sharing, and he does a lot of talks, as do the other members of that Conquerors Through Christ committee. And what a great resource Conquerors Through Christ is.
Yep. You can visit the website at conquerorsthroughchrist.net, and you'll find all those things that Dan talked about available to you there. You know, look around and check out what they have. It may be worth your time to become familiar and go through the steps and things that are there, just so you can help others if you have the opportunity to counsel them in any way.
Such an important topic, as Dan mentioned, and some great resources there. There are other internet addictions, as we mentioned at the top of the show, however. One of them is just good old-fashioned, you can't live without the internet and can't live without the things on the internet, maybe specifically social media and social networks. And I think all of us, maybe in the day in which we live, Sally, have maybe asked ourselves the question, you know, are we spending too much time, you know, with these tools, with these technologies, with this thing called the internet? Wikipedia is full of different chronic disorders that are related to internet addictions. PIU, CIU, we came across in our research for the show, problematic internet use, and probably a step further, compulsive internet use.
Yep, you can also turn to the internet for different tools to analyze how addicted you really are. So there's internet addiction test. I found another page that we can link to, smartphone addiction, so specific to the device, the smartphone. And if you read through this article, there are tests near the end of it as well to kind of gauge how dependent you are on your devices. So definitely tools out there. There's probably a whole branch of psychiatry related to it now and things like that. But probably on a practical, easy to implement or easy to analyze level is just kind of asking yourself, you know, am I spending more time with my device than I am with real people?
Right.
What kind of patterns do you have? Do you reach for your phone even when you could be doing other things, you know, just as something to pass the time of day? Is it the easiest way? And things like that.
Yeah, some easy questions that you could ask yourself that would be an indicator perhaps of your internet usage or reliance on it. Can you totally unplug for more than a day or two? And even if you can, maybe the question is unplugging even a worthy goal? There's a lot of attention to that. Do you wake up and check your phone, your email, Pinterest right away? Do you record 469 podcasts on technology? Might be a question that some would ask.
Guilty. So, yeah, definitely some different standards that you'd have there. I think that, you know, that choosing the virtual interactions over the personal interactions is probably what it boils down to. I've heard of people just setting apart their dinner table time, requiring everyone to put their phones in a basket or something, so you just aren't tempted to look at that text that you received during the dinner hour or whatever it may be. You know, can you still carry on a regular conversation with people, or is it easier to do via text? So,
So do you have any dinner table regulations?
No, but oftentimes we do have good conversation around the Draper dinner table that turns us to looking things up in Google or whatever it may be.
I do that too.
You got to see this video, or you know. Right. So we collectively use the internet, so it's not a solo effort anyway.
But it's just a tool. You know, it's not standing between you and your family, and that's probably a great thing. You mentioned the internet addiction tests that are out there. We'll put a link to some of that stuff in the show notes. There is a day that many are aware of, the National Day of Unplugging. Actually, I think it's 2 days, because I don't know why it's 2 days. Is that because of the deadline? Whatever.
No, that's not why, actually. The people behind the National Day of Unplugging are Jewish. And so their National Day of Unplugging starts with sunset on a Friday night and goes to sunset on Saturday. And so it's over March 3rd and 4th, a Friday night into Saturday.
March 4th and 5th, I have here in my notes. Is that
inaccurate? That must have been last year's dates. For 2017, it'll be March 3rd and 4th.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So a whole website there, a whole manifesto, something you can sign and commit to, all kinds of stuff wrapped around this day. What do you think, Sally? Have you ever participated in this?
I haven't. I'm a little afraid to, but I think it's a good idea. I actually did a little digging on their site. Once you sign up and, you know, commit to being unplugged March 3rd and 4th, they send you to a page with resources for families. They actually have a really nice downloadable ebook with all kinds of ideas of things to do and things to do to get ready for it, and 10 principles of unplugging together. I like one of their principles. It says, you know, things like getting outside and avoiding commerce and things like that. And then they have drink wine. So if you're stressed out, you can just relax a little.
Calm
if
down.
You don't have your smartphone at your side or whatever it may be. They have good books to read. One they mentioned for children was It's a Book. I think if anyone was at Wells Tech Conference, you saw Dave Tess present It's a Book, where someone's explaining exactly what a book is and that you don't plug it in or whatever, you know, and it's really well done. So just a lot of fun and great ideas for unplugging. And as I explained, they have this this Jewish roots to this website and this initiative. And one of the things that they publish is an iPhone app. I'm not sure they have it available for Android, but the iPhone app is called Friday, and you can use it anytime throughout the year. And what it encourages you to do is to unplug for 30 minutes on Friday afternoon. So you kind of are done with your work week and you take some time to de-stress and things on Friday afternoon. And the app will remind you about this and give you some, you know, interesting things to do and ideas and things for your unplugged time each Friday afternoon. So another option they have available to you.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, again, make sure you check out our show notes page where we have all these links and lots of great resources if you feel that this is an issue for you that you want to begin to address, or that somebody you know and love would maybe benefit from these resources as well. So again, thanks to Dan for spending some time with us, and blessings on your ministry, Dan. Very important work. Mm-hmm. Let's move right along, Sally, to our news in tech. A couple things from two big technology heavy hitters. Microsoft last week had an event, as well as Apple. Microsoft's event, I guess the biggest news coming out of that event was something called the Surface Studio. And maybe not so much of interest for our listeners right now, because it's extremely expensive, but it is essentially a big monitor, touch-based monitor. And I think that's where Microsoft sees the industry heading, these large monitors, at least touch-sensitive things that can be tilted down so it can act like more of a drafting table or drawing table, something that you interact with where you kind of reach out and get close to or closer to. That's a similar model that they've used with their regular Surface tablets as well that have keyboards you can attach, but you can pull them off. The Surface Studio starts at $2,999. So
what a bargain.
Not for just everybody, but I guess the interesting trend here, as I mentioned, is the fact that I think you're going to be seeing most computers, except those made by Apple, have a touch screen.
Well, you know, Apple has the iPad Pro.
They do.
How large is that? I mean, it's the same concept, basically.
Yes, it is. So. The other part of the news is Apple released new laptop computers that are not touch screens, kind of, but they have a touch, what do they call it, a touch strip. Mm-hmm. Which takes the place of your function key row from escape all the way over to whatever's on the right-hand side. And that's programmable. So they are hoping that their app developers, people who make Mac software, will take advantage of that and contextually change what's available in that touch strip at the top of the keyboard to allow things like scrubbing through video or special command keys for different applications. You know, a little bit more convenient, you know, oft-used key commands that can be placed in that touch screen at the top or touch strip at the top of the keyboard, while the screen itself, the monitor itself is not touch sensitive. At least they've added some sensitivity to that. So they're still kind of in these two camps where, you know, the iPad's all in, obviously, on touch, but the laptop itself is just providing some touch nuances that make productivity a little bit better, you know, on the MacBook. And these are not inexpensive machines either. I think they start in the mid 1500, somewhere in there, 1500. Some that are still sold without the strip. They upgraded all the internals, of course, made them faster. And this was kind of a big deal for Apple because it had been quite some time since they had updated their line of MacBook Pros. And a lot of people were getting a little antsy because they were buying, if you bought a MacBook Pro last week or last month, you were buying 2 or 3 year old technology, and that's an eternity in technology time. So Apple's brought some new stuff to the table, and if you are an Apple user, probably worth taking a look at.
I'd say just reacting to that touch bar, I hadn't read about that until you described it. I must be getting old because I just kind of want to say, wow, what will they think of next? You know, they took away my function keys, and
right.
And I guess I could get used to that, but that would be different. And, you know, innovation continues, change marches on, and we benefit from it because those huge monitors that cost $3,000 now from Microsoft, a year from now we'll probably say, you know, they're down to $1,500 or something, and over time become more and more reachable for us. And so exciting to see it change.
Yep. Sally, you have a touch monitor on your laptop itself. When you're using the laptop by itself, do you use that at all?
No, and when I accidentally do, it shocks me, and I get it. I'm like, oh, I didn't mean to touch it. Sorry. Right. But I know my son has the same thing on his, and he uses it all the time. It's very natural to him.
Yeah, I think we're going to see that with the generations as they come up. They're used to touch, right?
Right. One of the things for me is that I use it like as a secondary monitor to my main large monitor, and it's just too far away. I'm not interacting with the laptop keyboard hardly at all, you know, right. So I'm typing a long way away from it.
And you and I don't use too many applications that are, you know, really touch helpful sensitive. To have touch enabled. I mean, we're, you know, we're doing email, we're, you know, using Word documents, you know, mind maps, those kinds of things. And while touch can be kind of cool on those, it's just not a productivity boost. It's worth the effort. So
just
plus
reminds
your screen all dirty. You know, that's one
yeah,
of
that's true. That's true. My
wiping my screen off.
My other son, my middle son, actually has a really cheap Asus Chromebook, less than $300, and it's touch, and it'll actually flip all the way around backwards, so it looks like a tablet. You know, it'll do it all, and for a very affordable price. And I right. know he uses it as a touch screen. You know, he doesn't have a tablet. That's his thing. So
right, right. Should be interesting. So two trends, and they move forward with these two major players, and then you throw Google in there and some of the other manufacturers, and who knows what we'll get next year or the year after. It's just kind of a very fluid kind of space right now.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Let's go right into our picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, I just had a second thought and I'm bringing up one more thing. I'm not changing tune though, so give me just a second to share my screen, and I'm going to talk to our friends about Trello. We've mentioned Trello multiple times on the show. We use it for basically project management. We have different boards. I'm trying to think of the right terminology, with lists and cards, things to do, shuffle around, keep our pulse on where everything lands in terms of its work cycle, project cycle, things like that. And recently I came across Trello webinars and was quite impressed, actually, at the number of webinars they have. They have one coming up next Thursday, November 10th, 1 o'clock Central Time, Personal Productivity Hacks. So probably a really good way to get into Trello or to dip your toe in the water and see if it's something that interests you is to register and attend one of their webinars. But if you haven't been to one on time, real time, you can go to their on-demand webinars because they record them all and have them all archived here on this Trello webinars page. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. And I was checking this out. I had done some different Trello training and things like that, and ended up on this page and was checking it out. And lo and behold, what did I find but one to watch for organizing for the holidays with Trello. And if anyone out there is like me, there's a million new things added to your life as you lead up to Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays. And so I actually went through the process and created a Christmas 2016 board, and I'm tracking all my different gift ideas and things to do on the board. And so lots of uses for a Trello board. A teacher might use it with her students even to, you know, work on different projects. Certainly faculties could use it to collaborate on projects that they're working on. Pastors and staff ministers for keeping up with their things to do. Just lots of different ideas beyond just committees and software development teams and things like that. And I love that the webinars give you lots of angles to how Trello can help you. So if you're looking to get a little more organized, perhaps tune in and watch a Trello webinar and get a feel for how it works. I know when I started, it was very foreign concept to me how boards and lists and cards all worked and the different things you could do with them. But when you see someone demonstrate how they're using it, it becomes a lot more concrete. So I think the webinars are worth your time if you're looking for a solution for organizing and project management.
Very cool. The whole technology group here at the Synod office and the Draper office uses Trello regularly. We live and breathe it to some degree because it manages so well for us. Julie Majerus, or Julie Wagon Connect now, mm-hmm. did it.
That's right.
She was on the show last year, spring.
About a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before a Welsh Tech conference. And she did a Welsh Tech conference workshop on it. Using Trello for different things, including multi-language publications work. I just heard the other day that our Synod's Evangelism Commission is going to, and their coordinators are starting to use Trello. So cool. It's catching on. I think one of the biggest benefits of Trello from my perspective is its flexibility. Like you mentioned, there are so many ways you can use it. You can use your own personal style with it, and free. Much mm-hmm. of many of the features you can use for free at this point, although we've got a paid account for some of the additional features. So Good pick. I did not know about Trello webinars. I'm a couple of them that you were showing there on the screen, I'm going to check out, especially on Agile and sprint planning and project management stuff. So
awesome.
Cool. Well, Sally, my pick of the week, I kind of teased this maybe a couple weeks ago when I was talking about how I had kind of morphed how I was doing these podcasts to a different device. And for many years, it's strange to say years when it's talking about our podcast, doesn't it? Not just many episodes, many years. I'd been mostly using my MacBook, and that works pretty well. Although I've switched about a year ago to a smaller screen, and it's not as useful anymore. But I picked up about a month ago, just to experiment with it, because I saw a great review, the Asus Chromebox. And a lot of our teacher friends probably know all about these devices, those of them that are Chrome or Google Apps schools. It's not a Chromebook, it's a Chromebox. So it's basically a little square about the size of three slices of bread stacked on top of each other. It has a Intel Core i7 processor, so it's got the latest processor in it, 4 gigabytes of RAM, and then all kinds of different ports on it. It even has an SD port, so you've got USB 3, you have HDMI out, you have Bluetooth, all kinds of ways to connect this thing. It has no fan, so it's all solid state. If you're looking at the screen, you can kind of see all the ports. It even has DisplayPort out. And I am really liking this option. One of the best things about it is its price tag. You can get a 2-gigabyte model for $159, a 4-gigabyte model for $199. So for under $200, just under $200, you can get a really useful computer. And if you're not up on Chromebooks or Chromeboxes, they operate with a Chrome operating system. So there is precious little hard drive space. I think this one has 16 gigabytes. Essentially, it's a browser, and they've done a nice job, I think, with the operating system. Very fast, very safe. So Chromebooks and Chromeboxes, by extension, do not really have a issue with malware that can get installed on the machine, since you really don't install apps locally. You're using apps online. So if you have most of your stuff in the cloud and you're thinking about getting a new computer, you may want to look at these options. It's really quick on and off. It takes about 5 seconds to turn on and off, or to wake up and sleep or shut down. Very speedy in its operation. Again, haven't had any problems, you know, doing a podcast on it. There are some things that, just like a Chromebook, that you can't do. I would say if you're heavy into video editing, you're still going to maybe be challenged by that. You'd have to use some kind of online resource. Just a few activities like that. But by and large, most people, I think, could get by with a Chromebox or Chromebook. So two thumbs up from my perspective. I'm anticipating this being pretty reliable. It'll get updated and does all the things, many of the things that I need it to do. So there's very few downsides to this. So I was thinking maybe even trying to convince my mom to go with a device like this. A lot easier support. I'm not having to upgrade. She's using Windows 10 right now, so that was a whole big thing. Kept bugging her to update Windows, and then, you know, maintaining virus protection and backups. But if I could just get her over to this, I think that would be a huge win for the home technology support group that lives in my house. So that's a Chromebox from Asus. It's got a funny number on it. Let me stop my screen share here. It is the number? M004U. So that's the one that I would recommend. And I did look at a number of reviews, and I'd never actually tried a Chromebox before. But I think there's application for schools, application for home, students at home, even just a regular computer user might find this as a good for maybe not a primary computer. There's still maybe going to be those things that you can't get by without that need a real computer, real quote unquote computer. But I'm impressed. I like it.
Cool. Well, thanks for trying it out for us and giving us your review. I'll say hi, Mom, because I know she's watching. She heard you mention your mom, and she's familiar with the long-distance tech support. And we solved that problem by getting her an iPad, Martin.
iPad, so yep.
That's my recommendation. She doesn't want to sit at a desk and look at a computer screen anymore. She wants it with her all the time. So
$200 versus $700.
Yeah.
There's that,
that's
too.
True. That's anyway. True.
All right, let's move on to ministry resources.
Yeah, and I was excited to learn just recently about a publication or a set of publications that have been released by the Wartburg Project, and it relates to our lectionary, especially as we wind down the current church year and many are preparing for the new church year, which begins with Advent, right after Thanksgiving later this month. The Wartburg Project, if you aren't familiar, is a group of professors and pastors mostly from Wells and ELS that have joined together to produce their own translation of the Bible. And they are calling it, let's see, I just had it up here, the Evangelical Heritage Version. And you can go to wartburgproject.org and learn more about that. They've got a chart on the main page that shows how many of the books they've translated. They've completely finished the New Testament and have a large part of the Old Testament finished already as well. So having said that, it would seem that it might be hard to get a lectionary from an unfinished book of translation of the Bible, but they actually went through church year A, which is the church year that's coming up, and they've established the lectionary in a one-year lectionary, the Christian worship three-year lectionary, as well as the Christian worship supplement three-year lectionary, and then the LSB. Martin, you know what that stands for?
Lutheran Service Book. That's
there you go.
That's what he said. Yep.
Okay. So if you were to click on any of those, they have it broken down by the different seasons of the church year, perhaps starting with Advent. You can download either a DocX, PDF, or RTF version of year A. So I'm going to click on the PDF, and what you'll see, what you'll get, is the complete translated readings for the particular Sundays of the season. So this is the Evangelical Heritage Version, the
EHV for short.
Right. The different readings for that particular Sunday. They have it footnoted at the end that some quotations from the Old Testament are samples and may not reflect the final wording. And so basically what they went through and made sure that they had translations for everything that was part of the lectionary, but when they incorporate that into the full book translations that aren't yet complete for the Old Testament, things may change slightly. But basically you can get these different documents, like I said, for everything for year A, for all those different splits. Plus, they have a Thanksgiving lectionary as well. So if you want to try it out at Thanksgiving this year, there's the readings that are assigned for Thanksgiving. And so exciting to see, and maybe just something you want to add to your preparations for worship as you consider which Bible translation to use for the readings for a particular Sunday, and the people at Wartburg Project have made that super easy for you to do, so check it out.
Neat. I'm excited about the project itself. I haven't read much of it yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing what they produce and some of the resources around it, so good on them. Very nice.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's move to our featured video.
Okay, and this one,
while to do.
This is one that I just came across that's just went, falls into that category, too cute to pass by. It's a viral video. It shows on YouTube that it has 37,000 views, but over on Facebook, where it was originally released by this little boy's father, it has like over 1 million views. So it made its rounds through the internet viral a few weeks ago, and it's basically a young boy, age 4 years old, who's reciting Bible verses for each letter of the alphabet. And I mean to tell you, he nails it. He gets every single one of them correct. It's the most adorable thing. And just such an inspiration. I wish that I had that kind of knowledge in my head. I actually found the Bible verses online, and I'll have a link in the show notes to where you can download the My ABC Bible verses. They were on a homeschool website, and you could learn them yourself. You can use them in your classroom or with your catechism class. Inspire them by showing them this little boy's video, because he's just awesome, and what wonderful verses to have written on your heart. No matter what letter you're thinking of, you can come up with a verse to strengthen and encourage you from God's Word. And so please do give it a watch and download the verses and share them and learn them and enjoy them.
Cool. A bonus ministry resource today.
There you go.
That is going to about do it for this week. Next week, we'll do it all again. And as we mentioned, Sally will be east of the river here in Wisconsin, Waukesha, Wisconsin, to be exact. And we're going to be doing our monthly focus on some aspect of social ministry, one of those tools. And that tool will be Twitter. So tune in next week for uses of Twitter as Sally visits the CMM. Before we leave, want to encourage all of our listeners, viewers, to contribute to the show. We have a week every month where we dedicate it exclusively to community feedback. So we would like you to think about what you could share with the show. It can be questions, could be comments, could be product reviews, could be anything. There are lots of ways to do that, but the place to start your journey with the show is our show notes page, which is wellstech.wells.net. Across the top, you will see all kinds of little familiar icons, including Facebook, Twitter, Digo, Pinterest, Instagram. You can email us, wellstech@wells.net, or just leave a note there right on the show notes page as a comment to one of the shows. So that is available to you 24/7, 365, and we'd love it if you would contribute to the show. And as we say, join the conversation. Sally, thanks for joining me once again. Look forward to seeing you face-to-face next week. Safe travels, blessings on your journey, and thank all of you for joining us once again. And show 470 right around the corner next week. See you then. Bye-bye.